about ballots and stuff like that? Well, 213-653-9363. Again, 213-653-9363. Or go to elections.pacifica.org. Elections.pacifica.org. All right. I'm done. I don't have to say any more about this. Just keep this moving. The next program that's coming up is Off the Hook, and it is 1 minute past 7 p.m. here on WBAI New York.
Unter dieser Nummer.
If you'd like to make a call, please hang up and try again. If you need help, stay on the line and a hacker will assist you shortly.
And a very good evening to everybody. The program is Off the Hook. Emmanuel Goldstein here with you on this Wednesday evening, joined tonight by Kyle.
Hello.
Out in Skype land, we have Rob T. Firefly.
Good evening.
We have Gila.
Good evening.
And we have Alex.
Another good evening.
It is a good evening. It is a good evening, for now, anyway. of course, we have the bozos and clowns that are coming out later under the name of the Republican debate, as it were. Dictator wannabes, I suppose, is the best way to describe it. You know, it's fun. It's fun. We'll tune it in, see what sound bites drop, see who gets eliminated for saying something stupid. But, boy, I worry. I worry about what's ahead. Next week, something interesting is going to be happening. It'll be happening before our show. Remember, once we had a party to commemorate this. Not this time, though, because it's old news. But FEMA, in coordination with the FCC, will be conducting a nationwide test of the emergency alert system and wireless emergency alerts, known as WEA. The national test will consist of two portions. Testing both WEA and EAS capabilities. Both tests are scheduled to begin at approximately 2:20 p.m. next Wednesday, October 4th. The WEA portion of the test will be directed to all consumer cell phones. This will be the third nationwide test, but the second test to all cellular devices. So I guess it's the only time since we all met downstairs and had a blast. The test message will display in either English or in Spanish, depending on the language settings of the wireless handset. What if you have it set to some other language? Well, what happens then?
That's a good question.
You're just out of luck, I guess. The EAS portion of the test will be sent to radios and televisions. This will be the seventh nationwide EAS test. Well, okay, that's super misleading, because if you have Optimum Cable, every night is an EAS test at about 3 in the morning, where all channels get blanked out for a couple of minutes. And it's really, really annoying, and that's not how it's supposed to work, but that's what they do. Maybe the seventh nationwide EAS test disrupts everybody. But that'll be happening at about 2:20 p.m. on Wednesday, October 4th. FEMA and the FCC are basically coordinating with EAS participants, of which WBAI is one, wireless providers, emergency managers, and other stakeholders, I guess that's us, in preparation for this national test to minimize confusion and to maximize the public safety value of the test. Who wrote this? To minimize confusion and maximize public safety value. The purpose, in case it's still not clear, is to ensure the systems continue to be effective, to be an effective means of warning the public about emergencies, particularly those on the national level, such as election results or something. In case the October 4th test is postponed due to an emergency, why would it be postponed? It's a test of how strong the system is. You shouldn't postpone it for anything. But in case it is due to a widespread severe weather. Yeah. Okay. So an emergency can be canceled by bad weather. It's good that we know that now. The backup testing date is October 11th. I don't know. You guys want to do something for this? 2:20 p.m. cell towers will start broadcasting the test for approximately 30 minutes. So your phones will start making that annoying EAS sound, and it'll confuse everybody. And I guess if there's a real emergency, then we're all out of luck. For consumers, the message that appears on their phones will say, "This is a test of the National Wireless Emergency Alert System. No action is needed." It'll say that in Spanish if you're set for Spanish. But again, we don't know what's going to happen if you have a different language. EAS portion of the test is scheduled to last approximately 1 minute and will be conducted with the participation of radio and television broadcasters, cable systems, satellite radio and television providers, and wireline video provider. What's a wireline video provider? Does anybody know?
No.
No? Okay.
So would that be cable television?
Well, we already said cable systems, so it
can't
be that.
Sounds very formal.
Wireline video. I want that now. I want to know what a wireline video provider is. Anyone out there, if you're a wireline subscriber, please email us, oth@2600.com, because we're constantly learning. Somebody's furiously typing. They're going to look it up. Okay, fine. I guess we'll bypass our own listeners. That's what's happening next week. A little bit of excitement. Gila.
Sorry, I'm actually kind of curious about this because the thing I remember two things about the last nationwide test. The first was that I was not able to join you guys for the event, but the second one is that I never got that notification.
Well, then you have nothing to worry about. The emergency does not apply to you, apparently.
Apparently not, but I'm curious if I'm going to get the notification. One thing I have heard, though, is that there's a recommendation for people who may have a cell phone that other people in their lives don't know about, people who are trying to get out of an unsafe situation, who, you know, have a cell phone nobody else can know about, who would probably be best served to turn it off and leave it off.
That's a very, very good suggestion. I never even thought of that. But yeah, if you have a second phone, whether it's because you're hiding from somebody abusive, or perhaps you're having an affair, or you're living a double life of one sort or another, it's not up to us to ask or intrude. But turn it off on October 4th in the afternoon, because it will be making a noise. Or put it in vibrate mode. Does that work? If you put it in vibrate mode, will it still make a noise?
I was wondering about airplane mode.
Airplane. What happens to people on airplanes?
Because some people can't remove the battery.
Uh-huh. But flying up there in the sky, they don't know there's an emergency down on the ground because they're all in airplane mode.
Yeah.
Huh. All right. Well, you know, let's get cracking. A lot of experiments. Let's book some plane tickets. Put people in various parts of the country, see what happens. Try different phone services. Subscribe to Wireline, whatever that is, and let's see how that works.
If you're incarcerated, you could wrap in a candy bar wrapper, maybe. That would help.
Well, they're not going to tell anybody who's incarcerated.
Okay.
They're the first ones that they close the door. I've seen this happen. You know, in real life, emergencies happen, and they lock prisoners
away. But for a test?
Well, I don't know. Maybe they'll think it's real. Who knows?
That's true.
All right. Alex, any thoughts on this? We don't see you. We just see your icon.
Yeah, I'm here, and I think it would be fun to do something. I can't even remember how many years ago it was when we had the last party at the station in the Commons Cafe. And we had quite a nice turnout for that, too. So
we did.
That was good fun. I feel like that maybe could be replicated in some way. Perhaps. I mean, it's somewhat short notice, but yeah, I mean, we do all kinds of ridiculous things for these types of tests. So I think we need to keep that going.
Yeah. Well, you know, when we get the real thing, do we know what to do? You know, or is it something that is just mass, you know, chaos and perhaps sent for the wrong reasons or not sent at all? Remember, the EAS was not activated in Hawaii during the fires because they were afraid people would do the wrong thing. If they found out there was an emergency, they might go into the hills where the fire was. And that's why they didn't send an alert, because of what they thought people might do. Whereas, you know, you just have to think for a second. Don't go towards the fire. It's not too difficult. Rob, did you have something? Go ahead.
Yeah, one possible response is just respond to every single emergency alert tone by going to your nearest independent cafe and throwing a party.
Yeah. I mean, even if it's the end of the world, why not?
That's perfect.
Yeah. Hey, this has been in the news last couple of days about Target, the retail outlet, citing theft. They'll be closing 9 stores, including one here in New York City. They're East Harlem, San Francisco, Seattle, Portland. Right away, let's not blame the Republicans, okay? Let's be fair about this. You know, we can point the finger and say it's because of their economic policies and because of the way they treat people that this is happening, but it's not fair. Do we all agree on that?
No.
No? You want to blame the Republicans?
Well, I don't know that they're exempt.
Yeah, well, the thing is, you know, people say, wait, why are you blaming the Republicans? Because Democrats are the ones who get blamed. It makes as little sense to blame Democrats or Republicans for this. Okay, that's my point. All right, does anybody have a problem with this? No?
No, okay. You go ahead.
All right. That's so, so there have been these instances of mass robberies, I guess, where a bunch of people run into a store and steal things. And of course, you know, what are you supposed to do? People are being mocked because they're letting them get away with it, as if you're supposed to stand up to a crowd of 20 people and stop them from basically causing mayhem. It's an unfortunate situation, but you can't point the finger and say it's because of you that this is happening unless you're one of the people doing it. It's indicative of the times we live in. It's partially because of online retailers, because, you know, not many people are going to stores anymore. It's less crowded. They're more desperate for business. And
think of the overhead. It's really, the impact is maximal on sort of legacy retailers, and a lot of this has been pulled, footing pulled right out from under a lot of the older establishments and smaller businesses, and what's left is the larger stuff. And what I feel is sort of emerging is this is a symptom of the way that e-commerce is locked down. Like, we already view a lot of the workers in those warehouses as being in prison-like environments, and there's just no way to steal or, you know, they don't have to have the same overhead, and it's mostly storage, but their employees are tracked and monitored so much that their loss prevention situation is much like a prison. And so that's just not the same for someone who's out in the wind in the street and in an environment that's increasingly kind of desolate and ripe for opportunists. And I think the most recent one was like after a protest or something, right?
Well, yeah. And yesterday in Philadelphia, there was a protest about the execution of that motorist by a cop who completely got away with it. I won't even get into that. We don't have time. But there is, as predicted, a demonstration against such injustice, and some people, low lives, took advantage of that and decided to cause mayhem and rob some stores or just steal things and basically demean the name of the people that are standing up for justice. It's a terrible thing when that happens. Rob, go ahead.
It's also not a great thing. It's kind of a symptom of Target coming into a neighborhood and becoming through sheer force of its retail might, the source for things like groceries for people in the neighborhood. And when you're in a disadvantaged neighborhood like this, and you know, your only source for your weekly food is a place like Target instead of maybe, say, a grocery store that's possibly locally owned, then this puts it in this situation where, okay, people are walking out of there with TVs and whatnot, and they're closing the store. And where does that leave people who need to buy their groceries? And had this been, say, a grocery store, people wouldn't have been walking out of there with televisions. And, you know, you would have had just a sort of a standard grocery store situation. So things like this have, I don't know what exactly the local shopping situation is like near this Target, but things like this have the potential to cause things like food deserts, where people cannot get the groceries they need unless they expensively have them shipped or delivered or things like that. And that's an entirely dangerous situation in itself, and can continue to add to the disadvantages faced by a disadvantaged neighborhood.
You know, if you have a small store, I think this is a good point. A place where you know the guy who runs it, where it's not that big, you're less likely to, you know, not care about what happens to that place. Whereas a big box store that's part of a chain, you know, who really cares? It's not related to you. It doesn't really help you in any way. It's just this existence, like it is all throughout the country, and they're not really tied to the neighborhood. So, yeah, you're still going to have people that commit crimes, absolutely, but you won't have this kind of detachment, which I think is what online shopping has kind of led us all into. We all expect to just click a few buttons and get things delivered to us, and the only stores in various neighborhoods are massive chains that have no connection to the neighborhood. So it's not surprising to see that detachment where people don't really care what happens. And the question is, what do you do about it now? You know, the National Retail Federation released a survey of big brands, found that the average rate of shrink, and I'm familiar with this term as a retailer ourselves with the magazine, shrink is basically product that disappears one way or another. It's the value of merchandise that disappears from stores without being paid for through theft, through damage, or even inventory tracking mistakes. Back a few years ago, Barnes & Noble expected us to pay for shrink, expected the retailer. Like, we were responsible for it, even though we weren't the ones losing it. And when we suggested that, okay, well, we'll just station one of our own security people next to the magazine in every store, is that what you want us to do? Never got an answer to that, but it was absurd. And you know, the retailers tend to pass this on in one way or another. Anyway, that figure was 1.6%. The percentage of shrink in 2019 and 2020, and then it was 1.4% in 2021, and last year it was 1.6%. So, you know, it's the same. It hasn't really changed. It's you know, about that number, 1.6%. Now, if you break it down further and you look at that 1.6%, 36% of it comes from theft, 29% of it is employee theft, and then 27% is process control failures, errors. So it's a pretty standard number, I think.
I think there's also something to be said about it all becoming kind of a self-perpetuating cycle. Every single thing is now locked up in several stores by us. Mm-hmm. And I have very sensitive skin. I am allergic to a very specific item that's in a lot of soaps. And the soap I've been using for several years was recently discontinued. I need to find something new, but I need to check what I buy before I buy it to make sure it doesn't have this ingredient that I'm allergic to. Mm-hmm. I cannot walk into stores in our neighborhood, stores really anywhere in the city, and look at the information I need, because I need an employee to unlock and stand with me so that I can make sure that I'm getting something that's not going to break me out. And it has now made it physically impossible for me to shop in person for the things that I need. And I can't necessarily rely on what I'm seeing online on Amazon, for example, to make sure that the information that they're providing is actually correct. So I'm going to smell, and it's all because of this theft prevention plan that's not really preventing theft. That's not an issue in the first place.
Rob, go ahead.
Yeah, I mean, I was going to mention that same issue because in our neighborhood, a lot of the, big chain pharmacies and things have been locking up more and more items. And you can see them locking up certain items, controlled substances, the cold medicine that you can make meth out of, alcohol, things like that. They were locking up more and more like laundry detergent and things like that. And now they are locking up the paper slips that you have to take to the pharmacy counter to buy the meth drugs and things like that. So they're worried about people walking off with their slips of paper. That is the situation. And it makes shopping such a gloomier experience, too. I mean, the area we live in, I don't think it's particularly rough as these things tend to be defined, but this is just what's happening in these chains, and it I think represents the big attitude of these chains that not only don't have enough employees to go out and help all the people get the things that they need to out of these locked shelves, because they got rid of a bunch of the employees when they put in the self-checkouts. So
yeah,
there is such a dearth of the human element in going out and shopping for these things.
Alex, go ahead.
You know, I think to bring this back full circle, in a sense that I think we need to think about the reasons why people steal in such massive and coordinated ways, because going it alone, you're likely to get caught. Doing it together means, you know, you're less likely to get caught. You're doing it with a massive force that can't be stopped. And if you're doing it with that many people, why are so many people stealing? Right? Probably because they have to, not because they're greedy, but... Yeah, go back to 1938. There's an American historian by the name of Crane Brinton who wrote a book called Anatomy of a Revolution. And it was basically a study of why revolutions happen. And his thesis was that revolutions happen because of something called the intolerable gap. And the intolerable gap is the distance between what the people want and what the people get. And it sounds a lot like what the people want and what they're getting is very far. There's a very far distance between those two points right now. So I said I was going to bring it back full circle. Maybe we can blame the Republicans for this.
Okay, well, that's interesting. Although, you know, I do have to say that some people steal because they have to. I think a lot of people steal just because it's fun, because it's a challenge, because they're with a gang of people. You know, you don't need to be stealing iPhones. You don't need to be stealing sneakers, but that's what a lot of people are stealing. And I can understand the mentality behind it. I can understand getting caught up in the moment, but I think it's very different than when you have no choice in order to survive. And then I think stealing is an obligation. I think you have to steal if you're going to stay alive, you know, by eating bread or something like that. So. It's very different. Go ahead, Kyle.
I know there's a lot more to this, and there's some great points being raised in the discussion. But I think it's worth noting that it's in the interest of a lot of the big merchants and e-commerce sites, the newer businesses, to have retail be hell and not be a competitor. Mm-hmm. So they're very much, you know, I mean. I guess ambivalent about what the retail and how this is used politically. And I think the idea that shops and stuff get put out and you end up with lots of vacancies and then this is used in a political way, I think it's less about the individual parties and more about class and the influence that's going on the business side. And how the people that are suffering are the people that are everyday consumers that mm-hmm. need to survive, but they have all the costs and changes. And it is sort of a tumult and a change in the marketplace, but the effects of it, I think, are not going to necessarily go away. Like, these are I mean, with technology and stuff, this is definitely organized. They're like boosting networks that are leveraging all of that, and they're going to have fun with this. And it's, again, it only makes the e-commerce interests that are so powerful and sort of what I would say causing it and profiting, it only makes them more powerful because we just shut down these things. It gets blamed on people and they get more institutional power and less oversight to just continue gobbling up society.
I'm just concerned with the political advantage some people are going to try and spin this to. You know, basically, you're looking at stores.
It's maddening.
In New York, you're looking at San Francisco, you're looking at Seattle and Portland, all these Democratic strongholds. And guaranteed tonight in the clown debate, you're going to hear people saying, look at what all these woke cities are getting because people are going in there and stealing. And let's not fall for that. Let's not allow people to fall for that or make that the narrative because it's wrong. I want to draw your attention to this New York Times article came out in April of this year. Headline, a tiny number of shoplifters commit thousands of New York City thefts. Yeah. Nearly a third, listen to these numbers, nearly a third of all shoplifting arrests in New York City last year involved just 327 people. That's it, 327 people for a third of all shoplifting arrests. Collectively, they were arrested and rearrested more than 6,000 times. Some engage in shoplifting as a trade. Others are driven by addiction or mental illness. And they're concentrated. 18 department stores, 7 chain pharmacy locations account for 20% of all complaints. So, you know, it's relatively easy to get a group of people, a relatively small group of people, to cause a significant amount of mayhem. That's the story of my life. I've seen that happen over and over again, where it's basically a small number of people either causing all the turmoil or creating all the solutions. No one else is really doing much. So, let's not be manipulated here into thinking that there's something going on that isn't going on. Let's try to think of creative ways to solve the problem and not just finger point and make it a political issue because it's a human issue. It's something that obviously is a problem and needs to be dealt with. Rob.
And that's already being made into a political issue. The governor, Kathy Hochul, was on Channel 5 today talking about this and says it's a local policing issue. And, you know, this is going to be now used as the excuse to, like, give the NYPD another zillion dollars for some tanks or some crap.
More robot surveillance. I don't even know what it is. Well, R2-D2 lookalike.
What is that robot? Yeah, I keep seeing this everywhere. We were watching Canadian news from the Great White North. And they had a story about this robot in New York City, the NYPD robot. Have you guys seen this? It's this massive piece of metal or something that I think it's in the Times Square station. Thing is, it's always with a human cop, so I don't know what its purpose is.
They say that initially.
It has an emergency button you can push, but there's a cop right there.
You can push a cop's button.
Yeah, that's not hard. But yeah, it's a little distressing because, yeah, it's slow and clumsy right now. It's going to get better, just like those, you know, those dogs that...
Cyber dogs with guns.
The cyber dogs, yeah. Okay, so that's some of what's been going on. We had some reaction to last week's complaint about Gmail putting a lot of 2600 mail into spam by default because it's about hackers. It's about something that they deem to be spam worthy. And it's very inconvenient for people who subscribe and expect to be getting things from us. And we're still trying to figure out a way to handle this. And we've heard a lot of other people complaining about the same thing. A few people also alerted us to this. Listen to this headline. Google is killing Gmail's basic HTML version. You guys hear about this? Yeah. Google is removing its basic HTML view on all Gmail accounts starting in January. That's according to a notice on the company's support page. The company quietly confirmed the change on its site, but did not provide additional information about why it's removing the HTML option. Now, I don't use Gmail very much, but HTML is how you connect, right, with a browser. Can someone explain this a little more than this story does?
Well, what they're discontinuing is the basic HTML version, which is the version that just gives you your mail, just gives you your links to your messages and things like that without loading a bunch of the accessory crap, the chats on the side, the Google this, the Google that, and a lot of the extra software that runs on top of Gmail that isn't necessary for you to get your mail. So it is the basic interface version. But it's also the version that a lot of people with site issues use, mm-hmm. a lot of people with accessibility issues. And it's very important to, say, the blind community to be able to continue to access their Gmail with it. But, you know, Google decides what happens and who lives and who dies and who gets to read their email, I guess.
Wow. Okay. Well, that's does anybody know why they're doing this other than to just be more evil?
No? I don't believe they've given like an actual reason for this other than, hey, we're Google. We switch things off all the time at random or at a whim.
Wow. Okay. You know, I actually saw an advertisement for a Gmail spam filter. There's this ad going around about Google and how it's keeping us safe. And the spam filter apparently is one of those things that's keeping us safe. So the mail that we send that goes directly into the spam filter apparently is dangerous and part of a national problem that Google is the solution to. Yes,
Rob. Did you see this? Did you see this ad in your email? Because you could have marked it as spam.
No, I did not. I did not. And yeah, I wish I could mark all of the Gmail spam I get as spam and have it stop, but that never seems to happen. Okay, here's some good news out of New York State. New York State's education commissioner, as of today, has banned the use of facial recognition technology in schools. But she said it will be up to local districts whether to employ other biometric identifying tools. This decision was issued today from Commissioner Betty Rossa. Prohibits schools statewide from purchasing or using facial recognition technology, but schools can decide whether to use biometric identifying technology other than facial recognition technology at the local level, so long as they consider the technology's privacy implications, impact on civil rights, effectiveness, and parental input. Rosa's order cited a recent report by the state's Office of Information Technology Services that identified serious concerns regarding the use of facial recognition technology in schools, including, as reported in reference studies, potentially higher rate of false positives for people of color, non-binary and transgender people, women, the elderly, and children, as well as the ability of schools to use such technology without parental consent. I guess this is a good thing, right, Kayla?
I wonder if this is going to affect some of those the tools that people are using for distance learning. The tools that people were having to use to be watched while they were taking a test. And because, you know, that there were definitely issues with that with students of color who were getting flagged for cheating or flagged for not looking if they weren't making direct eye contact with the camera. And I wonder if this ban on facial recognition is going to bump up against some of those online proctoring kind of software as well. So that's just my first question. I don't know. But that was just the thing that it made me think of.
Go ahead, Alex.
Oh, well, let me tell you. I mean, my eyes are moist right now. I mean, I think this is a great step forward here. And people finally are waking up to the dangers of facial recognition technology, especially with respect to the use of such technologies in schools. And I think it was a concerned class of parents that filed a legal challenge that wound up causing the state to issue this moratorium on the use of facial recognition technology. But look, on the other hand, I can understand why a school would think this would be a good thing to use, right? You know, you want to have sex offenders that you can detect. You want to have violent people that you can detect. But there are better ways and other technologies that you can use other than facial recognition technology that could also end up, I think, chilling a lot of the free association and the types of gatherings that you would ordinarily expect in school. I think that what wasn't mentioned in the article are the constitutional implications of the use of this type of technology on freedom of speech, freedom of association of children, school-age children, and how that can have a long-term effect over time, especially when you start introducing facial recognition technology to kids at the pre-K level. This is just something that they become used to, and we talk about this all the time on this show. There's always this notion of function creep. We use it for one thing now. What's it going to be in 10 years?
Mm-hmm. You see that with surveillance cameras. People expect surveillance cameras to be everywhere, and if something happens, why didn't the camera pick that up? And these are people that ordinarily would have been against something like that, against some kind of a privacy intrusion. License plate readers, things that you know we saw as a big threat years ago. Now people expect that as well. This person was driving a car unsafely. I want their license plate. Why didn't we get the license plate? There should be a camera that has this. And you know, the same thing here. It's really like you say, function creep. It's something that facial recognition is going to be something we expect to happen at all times. We expect our, you know, who is that person walking down the hallway? How come you can't recognize their face? And it's, you know, the days of just passing people anonymously and not knowing what's around the next corner, are those days over? Are we so afraid of everything that we need to be informed about everything? Gila.
Kind of piggybacking on that, I have been irked, nay, bothered by something that I've been seeing a lot in my life this week, the past week or so, and this is as good a platform as any to mention it. I'm a Facebook user. We've talked about this. I am a simple, simple person, and I'm a Facebook user. And recently, I've been seeing a lot of people doing the celebrating your senior challenge, where they've been challenged to upload 10 photos of their child who's graduating from high school. No notes, no explanations, no nothing. So you're handing Meta 10 photos of your child at various points in the past 18 years and saying, here is my kid. Here is my kid at various points over the past 18 years. Now you can recognize their face from the time they were an infant to the time they were a senior in high school. And I have kind of lost my ability to say to the people in my life, please don't do this, because you are helping to train algorithms in the guise of doing something exciting to celebrate your senior. So if you're listening and you think Celebrate Your Senior Week is a good thing to do, please stop. Just stop.
Here's an idea. Can we use AI to generate a kid and upload that kid's pictures and just completely mess them up? I mean, there's nothing wrong with giving Facebook fake info and just trying to confuse it as much as possible. I think that should be what people do now more than anything else. You know, you want to know somebody's real kid, get to know them in real life, because Facebook is not real life. Go ahead, Rob.
Yeah, not only are you training the algorithms with that, you're training the kid to just accept the concept that they don't have control over their own image, that pictures of them are just going to be out there, and that you're going to do this whether they like it or not. Children cannot consent to these things, and yet there is a whole generation of adults right now who grew up with their picture on their parents' social media from the time they were born to whenever. And that's a really scary thing, I think, that I think current generations are dealing with, that mine certainly didn't have to. Yeah, there is a lot of things that can go wrong with having your child's photo out there. And, you know, just you don't have to do it. We have children in our family whose parents, you know, privately share photos among one another, among the family. And there are more closed ways to do that that don't put them on the open web.
Exactly. Alex, would you be willing to represent a bunch of existing newborns as in a future class action suit? Because, you know, they're babies now, but they're going to grow up and they're going to realize how they have had this injustice perpetrated against them with their pictures being spread all over Facebook and other places. And I think, you know, there'll be a lot of anger, you know, 15 years down the road. And you could stand to really have some interesting case law here.
Well, I think there will be a lot of anger with these kids, especially given, you know, how without any thought to the future considerations whatsoever, parents are as Rob noted, plastering pictures of their kids all over Facebook, where we know it's basically just a data minefield for surveillance capitalism. And I think, you know, who knows, maybe there's a way to bring that action even sooner than, let's say, 18 years from now, because these people can have guardians ad litem, and, you know, we can sue on their behalf.
But wait, you're doing the same thing then. If you're having guardians represent them, then you're not representing the kids' interest. They might disagree. You don't know.
Well, the guardian is supposed to represent the kids' interest.
You know, but how are they going to ask a newborn, do you want me to sue on your behalf?
Well, if it's a newborn, sure, yeah. But, I mean, there's an assumption here that, let's say, if it's even a 4 or 5-year-old, they can't make a decision about whether or not they want to litigate on a particular claim.
No, 7. So you have to be 7 for that.
Yes, that's right. 7, I think, is a good age to start thinking about litigation.
Mm-hmm.
And but, you know, a guardian is supposed to take the rights and privileges of another into consideration and enforce those rights. And so, hypothetically, you know, a parent or a guardian could bring a suit on behalf of its children now. I mean, the problem, though, is that we're all subject to these contracts of adhesion whenever you sign up to any of these social media accounts, right? So their terms of service and their terms of use force you essentially to grant them all these rights and licenses to the images that you post onto their platform. And, you know, that's you're fighting against a contract that you to which you had agreed.
Except if you're a baby, you never agreed to that. And yeah, interesting how things are going to
work. I think the schools just are a great way to start because it's a foundation. They have to use a lot of this technology there, and at mm-hmm. least is instructing about the concept of privacy to both parents and students alike.
Well, this tracks very nicely into a story from Canada where a decade of newborn child registry data has been stolen in what's known as a MoveIt mass hack. a MoveIt mass hack. I just like the sound of that. Ontario's government-funded birth registry has confirmed a data breach affecting some 3.4 million people who sought pregnancy care, including the personal health data of close to 2 million newborns and children across the Canadian province. Born Ontario is the name of the organization. They said in a statement on Monday that they say hackers, I'm going to say criminals, copied more than a decade's worth of data, including fertility, pregnancy, newborn, and child health care offered between January 2010 and May 2023. News of the breach comes after the incident was discovered on May 31st. It's not known for what reason Bourne took months to notify affected individuals that their information was compromised, but I'll bet it's related to how they got breached in the first place. Bourne attributed the cyber attack, a good name, by the way, for that organization. I just got it now, Bourne, Ontario. Bourne attributed the cyber attack to the mass hack targeting MoveIt, which is a file transfer tool used by organizations to share large data sets over the internet. Good to know. The notorious Russian-linked ransomware and extortion group Klop claimed responsibility for the MoveIt mass hacks, but has not yet claimed Bourne as one of its victims, according to a review of its dark web leak site that, I'm sorry, this is a very silly paragraph. Klop claimed that the MoveIt mass hacks from Bourne was not one of its victims, according to their dark web leak site that it uses to threaten to publish the victim's stolen data in exchange for paying a ransom. They have a website where they use it to threaten people. Oh, it's unbelievable. Bourne collects data from healthcare providers, labs, and hospitals that offer pregnancy care and healthcare for children. This data is then provided to healthcare providers to guide and improve the care. Cyber criminals, better name for them, stole names, dates of birth, addresses, and postal codes and health card numbers. The clinical information stolen includes dates of care and service, lab test results, pregnancy risk factors, type of birth, procedures, and pregnancy and birth outcomes and associated care. And, you know, if you had something like that happen in this country where we're much less progressive, people would be at great risk of having their pregnancy status revealed to hostile government officials and potentially prosecuted for doing things to their own bodies that the government officials disagree with. I can't see who's raising their hand. Alex, go ahead.
This Move It breach is really fascinating in a lot of ways. I've worked actually on quite a few different incidents for companies that have been affected by the Move It breach. It's a supply chain breach. It's very elegantly done. Again, another attack attributed to Russia. By the way, Klopp, the name Klopp, which they spell CL0P, Klopp apparently is Russian slang for none other than bedbugs, by the way. So that's shows you what they think of themselves.
Well, you know what? That's better than calling them hackers. Call them bedbugs. I like that.
Bedbugs. Yeah. Sure. I'm all for that. But what's fascinating here is so that MoveIt, as you mentioned, Emmanuel, is essentially it's a file transfer system and allows you to transfer large files over the Internet. What else allows you to transfer large files over the Internet? Something called FTP, right? So, you know, FTP servers, file transfer protocol servers, back in the day, this is what we used to transfer large files across the Internet. And when you use an FTP server and you transferred a file across the Internet from one place to the other, what did you do with that file on the FTP server? Did you leave it there or did you take it off? I'm asking.
Well, I mean, I did different things on different days, but sometimes I left it there, sometimes I didn't, depending on what I wanted to do.
Well, part of the problem with this MoveIt breach is that these companies were using these essentially FTP servers or file transfer servers called MoveIt and then just leaving the data in the system, right? So it's just kind of hanging out there.
Mm-hmm.
So this was really a smash and grab job. How they accomplished this, how Klopp accomplished this, was that they identified a vulnerability in the system itself, in the MoveIt system itself, and exploited it over time. And what they did was they were able to access any of the data that was still stored within that application or within those certain folders or directories that the MoveIt system had accessed. So if you transferred the data and you moved it out and you deleted it, mm-hmm. it wouldn't be accessible. So if you think about this area, this town, province, whatever it was in Canada, how do they explain 10 years of data being stored there?
You know, I think there's a relationship here to the way the story is written, where it's saying that this data was stolen. When in actuality, it wasn't stolen because, as you said, a copy was left behind. It was copied. It was copied. Stop. And you can tell when something's stolen because it's no longer there. But how do you tell if something's been copied? So they probably didn't even realize it was copied until maybe they checked the access times of each file and saw that, yeah, this was accessed back in May or something. And then they started to realize, put two and two together, that, they got their data copied somewhere else, but not stolen.
Oh. I guess that's one way of looking at, you know, any kind of data theft is just an unscheduled backup to the cloud, right? You know, or involuntary backup to the cloud or somebody else's cloud. But this one is somewhat fascinating too, though, because it was such an automated attack that happened over a large period of time, and I think it was way more successful than Klopp had actually anticipated. So they were able to steal, to exfiltrate, copy, if you will, a massive amount of data from a huge number of organizations. So it doesn't surprise me that they're not on the leak site yet. They don't seem like the most high-profile victim that Klopp has breached. I mean, there have been a very high number of really high-profile victims, including a lot of very big U.S. law firms that have been hit by this attack. So the sad thing is that I think that they will eventually get onto the leak site. I monitor that leak site on a daily basis, and it's used for extortion.
Yeah.
You know, they publish the data, and for a while, it was very difficult for people to actually download the data through the dark webs. But now they have set up BitTorrents and made it a lot easier to download all this stolen data. So,
improvements in technology that makes this kind of thing a lot easier to trade and to sell. I want to close out with this other story, which is either horrible or amusing, depending on your perspective. But a hacker gang has claimed it has breached all of Sony's systems and stolen data. They're now offering to sell the data to the highest bidder. This is not what hackers do, by the way. This is what criminals do. Sony did not confirm the breach in a statement, but said it is investigating the claims. We have, according to the group ransomed.vc, we have successfully compromised, and that's how they spelled it, all of Sony systems. They claim this on both the clear and dark nets. We won't ransom them, they say. We will sell the data due to Sony not wanting to pay. Data is for sale. the alleged breach was first reported by Australian site Cybersecurity Connect. The cybersecurity report said that ransomed.vc has posted a PowerPoint presentation online showing how the hacking was done, including screenshots of a login page and screenshots of files as well. The group said it's in possession of 6,000 files. That's really not that much, and it's hard to believe they have control of all the systems. It's basically small compared to all of Sony's systems. We're currently investigating the situation. We have no further comment at this time, said Sony. The cybersecurity report said that ransomed.vc threatened to post the information it has harvested online on September 28th. That's tomorrow, if it is not paid. Time is running out. The stolen data is reported to be in Japanese. And get this, in a bizarre development, a bizarre element of this alleged hack, ransomed.vc has said that if payment isn't received, it will be obligated to report the breach to the European Union's data privacy body. So they're following the protocol here to report a data breach, even if it's a data breach they committed themselves. They're really making Sony look kind of silly here. So that's the funny part of the story. But boy, every week it's something else. Closing thoughts, people. We have to move to overtime at 8 o'clock.
I love how this threat actor group is utilizing legal compliance issues against Sony, and it's really kind of funny.
Yeah, certainly is. Go ahead, Rob, quickly.
Just on that shoplifting story we were talking about earlier, just remember, if you see someone stealing food, know the heck you didn't.
All right. Now, people, there is going to be a Republican debate tonight, so it's up to you whether or not you want to go near that. Just know that the people there are afraid. They want to be the next dictator, I suppose, of their particular party, but there's somebody in the way. Let's just watch with detached amusement, and we'll see you again next week at this time. Go to YouTube.com and find us there, channel 2600, at 8 o'clock. We'll be doing overtime. You can call us. You can be a part of the show in that regard. You can also write to us, OTH at 2600.com. Good night. I'm